And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 5 minutes, approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 9th of April, 2024. How are you all keeping out there? I hope you're very well. I hope your Tuesday's going well for you so far. Right, we're here to keep you company over the next 3 hours. Loads of different features coming up on the show. We'll keep you across all the big news stories of the day, of course. Coming up after 10, Community Garda information, where you hear the latest appeals and information from Ungada Chief Kana First, that and so much more besides. So stick with us throughout the course of this morning. And we want to hear what you have to say. We were really busy on the lines yesterday. Greatly appreciated. WhatsApps and texts. 086 60 25000 086 60 25000, and you can send your WhatsApp voice notes to that number too. Don't be shy. 086 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25000, and from outside the Republic you add 00353 and drop the first O and off you go there. Emails to comments at highlandradio.com. every paper has pictures of either Leo Varadkar or Simon Harris. The picture on the front of the Irish Times is Leo Varadkar waving to the people who were stood outside the Irish and looked on. And in the background, Michael D. Higgins watches on from the doorstep. So he gave his final salute, resigning. He handed in his resignation to President Michael D. Higgins at Irish and looked on yesterday evening. Well, Simon Harris now has a job to do. He is to get elected as Taoiseach, which is a fait accompli, and then he has to, of course, set up his new government. Saying that he had no regrets about leaving office, Leo Varadkar resigned as Taoiseach last night, clearing the way for new Fine Gael leader Simon Harris to succeed him today as Ireland's 16th and 37th youngest Taoiseach. The Dáil's expected to vote for Mr. Harris's nomination this morning, after which he will go to Áras an Uachtaráin to be appointed to the role by President Michael D. Higgins. Mr. Harris will then return to government buildings as Taoiseach, where he will begin to inform colleagues of his cabinet choices. The new cabinet will be announced to the Dáil at about 5 p.m, it is expected. Though all ministers are deemed to have resigned when the Taoiseach resigns, Fianna Fáil and Green ministers will be reappointed by Minister Harris under the agreement between the parties. However, Mr. Harris has choices to make about the Fine Gael ministers, with TDs loyal to him eyeing promotions. You would hope it's about experience as much as loyalty. But anyway, with Mr. Varadkar's departure and the announcement by Minister for Enterprise Simon Coveney that he would not seek reappointment to his post, Mr. Harris has at least two cabinet vacancies to fill. There's been intense speculation in Fine Gael last night over potential promotions and demotions at the cabinet gathered in Farmleigh for a farewell dinner for Mr. Varadkar. Sources were divided about the future of Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, who has lobbied strongly to keep her job. What do you think? Should Helen McEntee keep her job? There are certain areas that people believe that she's fallen down on. There are other areas where I think particularly in violence towards women, domestic violence and others, that progress may not have been made under someone else's stewardship. But what do you think of her performance as Minister for Justice? Should she keep her job? I suspect she will. Several Fine Gael TDs who spoke to the Irish Times last night said they expected the two key promotions would be Peter Burke to the Department of Enterprise and Hildegard Nocton to Mr. Harris's former role as Minister for Higher and Further Education. But others suggested that Limerick TD Patrick O'Donovan would be promoted. I'm sure they all know at this stage, and we'll find out later. The Pope's comments, most recent comments, are being carried extensively in the papers, including the Irish Independent. The Vatican has declared gender-affirming surgery and surrogacy as grave threats to human dignity, putting them on a par with abortion and euthanasia as practices that violate God's plan for human life. The Vatican's Doctrine Office issued Infinite Dignity, a 20-page declaration that has been in the works for 5 years. After substantial revision in recent months, it was approved on March 25th by Pope Francis, who ordained its publication. Now, I mean, gender-affirming surgery is a very divisive issue. And this is my ignorance, and it's not something I've thought greatly on. Surrogacy I didn't realise that would be sort of chucked in there with some of the other concerns that the Pope has. I mean, do you agree that surrogacy is violating God's plan for human life? Or I thought it's about giving life, is it not? But as I say, I haven't really thought it through, but obviously the Pope keen to make his views known on this. In its most eagerly anticipated section, the Vatican repeated its rejection of gender theory or the idea that one's gender can be changed. It said God created man and woman as biologically different, separate beings and said they must not tinker with that plan or try to make God one's God or make oneself God. It follows that any sex change intervention as a rule risks threatening the unique dignity the person has received from the movement at the moment of conception. So speaking out really quite clearly on transgender surgery and also, as I say, surrogacy. Any views on that? 086 60 25,000. I don't think we saw much of the eclipse yesterday, did we? But it was a sight for some sore eyes, as millions did see the eclipse. A rare total solar eclipse yesterday turned day into night, which happens at night time often anyway. But anyway, turned day into night for millions across Mexico, the US and Canada. Lucky viewers watched as the moon blocked the sun, leaving only the outer atmosphere visible. In some areas, totality, where the moon fully covers the sun, lasted for as long as 4 minutes 28 seconds. In Ireland, dozens of spectators gathered on the Sky Road in County Galway to witness the eclipse shortly after 8 p.m. Clouds parted to reveal the rare event. Didn't see anything where I was. I don't know if you did, where you were. It was just pretty cloudy and I didn't even really notice it getting dark or what have you. But anyway, the thing I found quite interesting and somewhat worrying too is that very shortly after the eclipse in the United States, there's Google Analytics, so you can actually check what people are Googling and you can check the patterns in what they're Googling. And since the solar eclipse and the hours after it, there was a massive spike across the world in internet search results for why do my eyes hurt and my eyes hurt. They peaked far and above where they've ever been since Google was invented. So despite people being warned not to look up, people obviously did and then found themselves with sore eyes. Okay. Now, on to the Irish Daily Star, Sinn Féin, which already has by far the biggest online presence of all political parties, spent more in social media ads than all others combined so far this year. The latest report from Mully Communications analysed the social media ad spend of political parties and found Sinn Féin has more social media reach than all other parties combined. Now, I'm not sure if they can determine if that's paid or not. But anyway, the latest report shows Sinn Féin, led by Mary Lou MacDonald, is spending more than double on social media ads at €44,000, while Fine Gael spends €8,450, Fianna Fáil spent €7,000, Labour spent €2,450. But I don't recall seeing a Sinn Féin ad. I definitely see a lot of Fine Gael ads. Not so much Fianna Fáil, but the most ads I would see are Fine Gael ads, but they seem to spend much less than Sinn Féin. I mean, there's an organic sort of presence online as well that you don't have to pay for. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says a date has been set for his ground invasion of Rafah. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. Global alarm has been raised by the prospect of an offensive, including from Israel's top ally, the US, which has demanded to see a credible plan to protect civilians. Currently, 1.4 million Palestinians are there, 6,000 of them children. Israel's insisted it has a plan to protect the civilians. It is purchasing 40,000 tents to prepare for the evacuation, an Israeli official said, speaking on condition of anonymity because they were not authorised to talk to the media. In a statement yesterday, Mr. Netanyahu said the Rafah operation is essential for a victory. It will happen. There is a date, he added, without elaborating. And he had to say that because under pressure, and for one reason or another, he did pull significant numbers of troops out of southern Gaza. He was compelled, it seems, by the US to open up aid routes, and presumably he was getting a bit of pressure for looking weak, and that's why he's reiterated what will be nothing short of an absolute disaster to go into Rafah. And finally, the Irish Sun this morning. The jury in the Stardust inquest resumed yesterday following a question regarding a 49th victim of the tragedy. 48 people died in the tragic nightclub blaze in Artane, Dublin on Valentine's Day in 1981. But yesterday, on the fourth day of deliberations by the jury, the coroner addressed a query about one victim who had been in the early stages of pregnancy. Dr. Myra Cullen-Hain advised that jurors can only make their determination in relation to the 48 people who lost their lives in the incident. These fresh inquests into the deaths began last April and just gives you a sense of the difficult task facing those jurors. Okay. Now, we are joined on the programme by Fine Gael MEP Maria Walsh. Good morning, Maria. Thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
No, it's good to have you on the programme. And we're going to talk about a very serious matter. So what I might do beforehand is ask you just about the process that's been happening over the last wee while. Leo Varadkar is gone since I last spoke to you. Simon Harris is in. How do you think that leaves your party?
I think it leaves us very strong. The current Taoiseach, technically he resigned as of yesterday with President Higgins, but as he shared, and everybody listening to you had heard him on the news, and since just sharing, he was ready to hand over the reins, and Minister Simon Harris stepped up, and we had a very busy 2 weeks, a very successful Ardesh in the University of Galway on Saturday, where Minister Harris laid out his plan and highlighted a number of key priorities. And we'll see what the next couple of hours look like in terms of his appointment for ministers and minister of states.
Do you
Sadly,
have any
Greg, I do not have inside information before
That's
you
okay.
ask.
I think we all
it
know.
Certainly is not me.
I think we all know anyway. Do you have any concerns as to where the party might go as it scrambles to sort of become more relevant to, Ireland over the next few months? I'm thinking two particular areas such as immigration.
I think our relevance I don't think that's to be questioned, but I know many of your listeners will question that on as councillors and myself as an MEP will be knocking on doors and have been knocking on doors up until the elections on June 7th and beyond. Minister Harris has very much stressed that he's hoping to push out this government until the last possible time. So given everybody time, given him time specifically to work on key issues. I know in listening to news today and in the last couple of days, obviously Law and Order, the support and the process of our migration system. As a pro-European, I believe we must adhere to our international protection standards. But I understand the frustrations also people are showing in communities. And just this week, actually, this evening, I'll fly to Brussels to the Parliament because we vote on the EU Migration Pact, which will be a firm and fair process working with all member states, which is what needs to happen so that people... they're not applications. There are people fleeing various countries that need the supports that they do. But we need to make sure that we have that communication style in place for our communities to understand what's going on too. So I take that fully on board. But from his side, you're going to hear the word energy, the word re-energize in sense of the Ardesh, if anything to go by. We have been hitting the ground running and we'll be putting ourselves local and MEPs to the people on June 7th and hopefully long after that, the general.
Indeed. Now, obviously you're contesting the European elections, and there is concern that female MEPs particularly, but not exclusively, I don't think, may have to heed a warning of the threat of explicit deepfake images being used against them in future elections. And just for those who may not be aware, this could be a video, this could be an image, this could be a video. Technology has advanced to the point where the lines of what's real and what isn't real have been completely blurred, and that it's very possible now and very doable, and not just by tech experts but anyone, that you could take my face and place it on somebody else's body and it can be moving and speaking, and you would have to dig a bit deep to try and ascertain if it's actually real or not. And it is a real concern, Maria. What has been talked about in relation to this?
It is. This was an issue, and a serious issue, and really delighted you're giving us time to discuss it, because an organisation called EU Disinfo Lab, which is an organisation that works with research academics, political representatives, media outlets right across the EU, and is constantly updating certain threats that are impacting voter participation. And one that was flagged to me was the rise and the threat of deep fakes. And to your point, it is not just images, it's also audio, it's video. And sadly, we're seeing the rise. Now, for those listening might remember Pope Francis, I think it was March of last year, came out with this. It was a deepfake image that did the rounds, actually went viral, of him wearing this white puffer jacket, looking very sleek and fit. And it took a couple of hours for people to stress out the fact that this was a deepfake. You have that as quite humorous, and maybe brought up his street cred a little bit. And then on the other serious point, though, you have a reported audio file that was created using deepfake technology of President Joe Biden that went out to voters, and he's a very iconic voice, so no doubt if I was a voter receiving this, I think, oh, I just received an audio file and a voice message from the president encouraging me to vote. However, there was a number of disinfo and misinfo points within that audio file, so you have extremes. Where I fear for this, and I guess this is my flag to those listening, it is sadly, you will potentially see a number of deep fake files, videos, images over the course of many elections. But as we have local and Europeans upcoming, it has been flagged to me by this organisation, EU Disinfo, that female candidates, and to your point, actually, at the start, males too, could be subject to this. And that could be an image of me or video of me going out in fake contact, but looks very real, and conducting either sexual or misconduct forms.
That discredits
me and my work.
Of course, the problem too with this is because it could be, you know, it could be a WhatsApp image, or it could be framed as if it was some sort of, not WhatsApp image, like a voice note or something, as you mentioned, or it could be framed as an image that was sent to someone, you know, and then it was leaked. The problem is, though, that when this happens and it's inevitable, it's keeping the lid on it. And we've seen in the past, you know, where people have, I mean, your colleague, for an example, Luke Ming Flanagan, the hacking of his Twitter account, right? Not everyone knows that he was hacked still to this day. Do you know what I mean? That's sort of an example I'm trying to give here. So in other words, the more you explain, oh, that's not me, that's AI generated. She would say that, wouldn't she? Or he would say that. And that's the problem in this day and age, is that once it happens, there is always a damage to it, beyond obviously the terrible violation, the personal violation. And it's really hard to know how to sort of get around that.
Yeah, and sadly, to your point, once it's out there, if it's 5 minutes or 5 hours, the time frame often is irrelevant, because very difficult to renege or roll back on when something is fake. And then, as you shared, and rightly so, you're trying to get out to as many people to say this isn't true, and people have to be left to their own devices to believe it or not. You know, it's a sad state of humanity, actually, in one side, but I think that might be a longer and greater debate, Greg. But from this side, as an EU legislator, we have the Digital Service Act, we have the recent AI Act. They have pieces of legislation that will hold those that are caught accountable, but we're looking at, sadly, a little bit of too long in the tooth to make that happen. I know Meta have been challenged and have agreed to put a tagline on their Instagram and Facebook post saying made by AI or generated by AI, which helps us, you and I as users, to understand what's real and what's not. But I can only stress to those, and I think this is why this conversation is so relevant, is to continue to stay informed. This is a public awareness piece. Verify sources, you know, challenge the fact that perhaps before you spread or share, that you just make sure and check the credibility of such, and then report any suspected deep fakes. And, you know, I think we have to be really conscious of other reports that tell me constantly in my work in the European Parliament that on average, three to four images on the go are constantly fake. So you can imagine me and you open up our phone, and the amount of time, I don't know about you, I sometimes live on my phone, I'm seeing a lot of content. So how much of that is fake and how much of that is real? I said it to you before, as an Irish MEP, we also have due diligence, the fact that we house a number of the social media platform companies in this country EU.
I think Meta, Google will work with governments. I think the problem is X, really, in particularly in that, and even to the point now whereby they're in full-on dispute with Brazil over censorship and what have you. I don't believe in censorship, and maybe they're taking a stand and that's fine, but the point is then, you know, they can be slow to act in other jurisdictions as well. You know, stuff gets removed quite quickly from the other platforms, but X, seemingly, it's just a bit of a law unto itself.
It is. And I have no counter argument because I wholeheartedly agree with you. However, we have to move and work on some shape or form, particularly with all platforms. But if X and the main man himself is not moving on stuff, that doesn't mean we need to renege or be slow on the likes of Meta and other platforms not working with that tagline of made with the eye and ultimately pulling content down fast enough. I spoke to someone who's a data analyst with Meta a couple of weeks ago, actually with YouTube specifically, I should say, a couple of weeks ago. And I was trying to just understand the workflow. She goes, we are online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, pulling content down. The speed of which it's going up, inciting violence and fear. She goes, I work in that area that is constantly pulling down. At the time, she was working on the Moscow demonstrations and protests and the violence that incurred from that. So there are people working in this field. It's just either we don't have enough of it, we don't have a fair or judicial system to pull this content down fast enough, or those, dare I say, I really believe if you're using a social media platform, we should treat it like we treat Airbnb and Revolut, for example, that you have to have an identification linked to your account that's kept safe and is protected, but that you're held accountable should you participate in anything that is illegal.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Creating and inciting fear and harm.
All right, listen, thanks very much for that. Take care of yourself. Maria Walsh, Fine Gael MEP, also contestant, of course, the upcoming EU elections. But the AI imagery now is so detailed, what it can create from scratch, let alone switch one person's face to another person's body, is going to be a real difficulty. And yes, at the moment, it's for, you know, people in the public eye. But how long is it before this technology is easily accessible and it could be used around schools and stuff? You know, so it is something we all need to keep an eye on. Even if you're not too in, some people might go, well, politicians, what do you expect, blah, 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 blah. But when it affects our children as well too, and it will, whereby it could appear that your daughter or your son did something that they didn't do, we can imagine the negative impact it might have on their well-being. A caller says, Helen McEntee must stay. Her reform work on the unfit for purpose family courts and zero tolerance of all abuse by anyone, including parental alienation, has been world leading. And that's the point I was trying to make, that of course some people might have some issues with some of the stuff she does, but then do you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, or maybe you do? Would you ask anyone who can vote for Jason McCahill tonight, please? Thank you. Jason's a lovely local lad and is a great entertainer. I think that's on TG Cahir. It's not a programme I've ever watched, if I'm completely honest with you. Right, let's take a quick break. We still have loads of comments from yesterday too, by the way, to catch up on. So if you did message the show yesterday, your message certainly hasn't been ignored, and hopefully we'll get to it as we mix it with today's comments over the course of the next 2.5 hours. A caller says, I remember the eclipse happening in the UK in the late 90s. The beautiful day turned very dark, turned windy, and the birds disappeared. It was brilliant. Also, the red top newspapers were giving out free glasses to view the eclipse as people were warned the damage it could do to their eyes. I don't think I would be trusting cheap glasses from a red top to protect my eyes, to be honest with you. But I do remember the time that you're talking of. Ministerial picks, what has experience or abilities got to do with it? Remember, Mr. Varadkar selected on the basis of social media activity, which is, of course, Simon Harris' primary, possibly only skill. Another caller says, I know the name of a senior guard that deals in drugs. Okay, well, you should get on to the guards and tell them that. That one slipped out. I should have checked that one before I read it out. But anyway, Termin Bingo is raising funds for Relay for Life this Friday, and the scammers are targeting it by messaging people telling them they've won a prize. How low can these people go? Indeed, I saw some of those screenshots that were shared with me, and they go as low as a snake's belly, it would seem. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. Darren on Facebook. Greg, how about getting someone from the so-called far right on? Because you've nothing but far left agitators on. Just because Maria is a woman, whatever that is these days, doesn't give her a pass. I mean, Darren, listen, there's people from all political backgrounds on the show, left-leaning, right-leaning. I don't do far left, far right stuff, to be honest with you. But there are definitely people that come on this program that would be very far apart from Maria Walsh in her points of view as well. All views are aired for the most part on this show, providing they don't, they're not illegal or what have you. Gareth on Facebook. Greg, can you ask Maria why her party is ignoring DCB homeowners, defective clock block homeowners? I will. We're getting close to the European elections now, and there are other people in the race as well, and those issues will all be discussed as part of conversations we'll be having with people, by the way, to get people's stance on certain issues, the roundtable debates, as they might say. Right, Andy Hawkins, a car enthusiast and member of Donegal-based Car Club 074. Good morning to you. I love it. 074. Hi, Andy. How are you getting on?
Morning. How are you?
Good, good, good. We were talking yesterday. We were listening from a parent, and there was no anti car modding sentiment on the show yesterday from our listeners. But we did have a couple of parents whose young people in their lives were modding their cars, struggling to get car insurance. Is that an issue that you find amongst members of the 074 Car Club, Andy? That, you know. Well, tell us, actually, before we do, talk to me a little bit about car modification, that scene, and I suppose the difference between it and so-called boy-girl racers.
Yeah, well, like, for us, it's not really, it's 24/7. I mean, I know for myself, like, if I didn't have cars, it's what I grew up with, so I don't really know anything else. I'm not really into any sort of like UEA or rugby or football or nothing like that. So it's kind of the main hobby that I have got going on in my life. Between it and motorbikes, I don't think I have any other interests outside of that. So like I don't really want to jump on anybody's back about it. But like when it comes to, I suppose we look at it like from the side that we're kind of more customizers than what you would call the term boy racers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be a massive fan of that term anyway, but we're more customizers is what I would call it.
And just for the general public, would you say, you know, maybe some of the cars you might see in shows like Fast and Furious, that kind of stuff, kitted mm-hmm. out road cars?
Yeah. Well, that I'm standing here looking at my own car. We've just returned from a show with our club in Lisburn there at the weekend called Dubshed. They've opened up a section now for Japanese cars because that's what our club kind of mainly deals with. And that's what we do. We design these cars ourselves and we build them. And even in looking at my own car here, like the kit that's on my car is actually handmade from scratch. Like it's not just, you know, bought parts and glued onto a car and away I go. Like this is something that I designed from scratch, and between me and other people in the club, we've actually made this stuff ourselves.
And the cars look absolutely unbelievable. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And also, too, I've noted, and I think I've read out a couple of announcements about it, Cars and Coffee is an event that you've run.
Yeah. We've actually, like, kind of over the last couple of years, we've kind of built ourselves a fairly good name kind of throughout the country for, like, the quality of our cars specifically. And, like, we've, like, a couple of our cars are actually show-running cars at the minute. And so we thought, like, we would like to kind of get under the realm of running a show up this kind of neck of the woods, because it doesn't really be, if you want to go to a big show, we have to go all the way to the likes of Belfast, the likes of like Mondello and Kildare and stuff. So we thought we'd run a show, and Snugborough have been very kind of welcoming to, you know, us kind of running shows. So we thought we would try and set up our first show, and actually two of the boys in our club have actually just moved out of their houses in Remelton because they're being set to be demolished with Mika. So, and my own parents' house is the same. So we decided, like, I mean, like, there isn't a bigger problem in Donegal at the minute. So why not, like, try our, like, use our influence from our side of things and try and raise as much money as we can. So we're going to run that show now on the 5th of May.
Brilliant! It's exciting, and that's going to be out. Where is that going to be located?
Snugborough.
Okay,
down
brilliant.
In Bonagee, down Letterkenny.
Plenty of space there.
Sunday the 5th. Yeah, we actually, well, just from speaking from with the owners of Snugborough, we have kind of to start off space for 90 cars.
Mm. Wow. Okay, and it'll draw a huge
crowd.
It's going to
be Yeah, well, that's it. Like, well, weather dependent, as we all know, up here is kind of a big thing. But yeah, like I've been personally a couple of them there before. The crowds, like, it's a Sunday morning thing, and like, there's not much else to be doing on a Sunday morning, so why not come out and have a nose around some cars? Especially if we're trying to get cars that, you know, you wouldn't really ever really see in the roads. So trying to get some kind of high end stuff and some really like one off. Kind of bulk cars, just for. I know when I was a kid, I like to go to car shows and see things that like you just do not see, or you would see on posters on your wall.
Mm. Now, yesterday, someone, you know, comments perhaps grouped car enthusiasts with boy racers, and I think someone said yesterday that all modified cars should be banned outright. Now, I mean, obviously, that's going to be tough for you guys to hear because he's put so much time, love, and money into the vehicles. You know, you aren't mm-hmm. your boy racers in inverted commas. And that's why I thought it important to chat to you as well, Andy, to give all sides to this. Mm-hmm. It must be frustrating, yeah. Is it, when you hear comments like that?
It really is, because I feel like we're completely misunderstood. As I said, like, if I didn't have cars and motorbikes and stuff, like, in a way, it's kind of like, you know, we have a bad day. We come home, we go to the garage, we start working on cars. Just, you know, it's kind of like a therapy for us in a kind of weird way. It's just something to think about and kick our heads away. And then just to be, like, I know there's people out there on the roads that are doing, like, crazy, stupid things. To be honest, I see, like, driving to work in Letterkenny every day, I see people in completely normal road cars doing stupid things as well, like putting on makeup or taking phone calls or, you know. But for us to be lumped into a category that everybody has a real hatred for just kind of doesn't really seem to be fair, because, I mean, we this is everything we do. Yeah. And we put a lot of money, a lot of thought, you know, and a lot of effort into it. And just to be kind of, just like I did actually hear when I was driving home from work on the repeat of your show last night that somebody says everything should be banned. Well, like, what about other stuff that people like? We just ban everything because it might be like mildly annoying to somebody.
Yeah, and
kinda
as you say
work.
Too, as you say too, you know, if you were to dig down into it and the cause of collisions and what have you, you know, would people like you who love your cars as much as you do feature highly in those figures? Probably not, I would suggest, at all. Andy, this whole conversation started, though, from a mother whose son probably is like you or like you used to be, loves the car, not interested mm-hmm. in, you know, wasting the money on drink or whatever, puts it all into the car, went to insurance companies because it's modified, can't get insurance. Is that a problem for your members, your colleagues?
Actually, it's funny you say that, because one of the boys is just after purchasing a car, and it's a small car. It's like a 660cc engine, so it's like half of a litre engine. It came in from Japan. It's a kind of quirky wee small car, and just like the insurance companies don't even try to find out anything about it. They wouldn't even risk assess that individual car. They just go, oh, Japanese, nope. So he's actually stuck now with a car that I think he's 27 years old, and he's stuck now with a car that he might just have to have as an ornament in the garden because nobody will even consider him.
Yeah, or tow it to car parks or shows on a trailer. It's completely useless to him.
That's it. Like, and you know, we don't exactly have fortunes of money, and all the money we do have, we do invest into the cars. And to be told then that you're not even allowed to take it out is, you know, there's just a funny attitude, because like for us to be such a motorsport driven country, and then when people like us come to build these cars and want to take them out and show them off, then we're, you know, nobody wants to see us, and we get all lumped in with this really bad name.
Yeah, caller says, can I just say off the bat of car modifying, I drive a modified Lexus IS200, and I must say the attitude towards young people enjoying their cars is crazy. People look down their nose at us, which I suppose is what maybe you might feel some listeners were doing yesterday, looking down their nose at car enthusiasts. Let's just call it as it is. It must have felt like that.
Yeah. Oh, 100%, because like even say there at rally weekend, like we would come in and as a group, we all kind of meet up in a certain area just in the middle of the town. But once we get our cars parked and kind of on display, for want of a better term, we don't move. Like it's not us that's in the traffic wrecking the place and doing burnouts and stuff. Like, so that's just from our side of our club. We're just there to display for people that are walking around to see, you know, and then to be get to the Monday, and I always enjoy the Monday, listening to Highland after it, just to hear everybody complaining.
Well, now,
you know, we're all tired with
the
one
Andy, in fairness, Andy, in the last couple of years, hopefully you were listening and realised that it was a more balanced conversation. Because, you know, and I've said it on this programme, like, I'm tired of the, you know, not putting facilities on for people to be able to enjoy their cars and then complaining if they're driving around, you know, shutting everything off so they have no access. You know, I've been calling for years that, you know, that part of it should be embraced and people should have spaces to enjoy and not be seen as a blight. But I take your point, but I have tried very hard in the last couple of years post-rally to try and not do the usual, you know?
I'd understand that, and I do hear, like, say the likes of the yards that are getting opened up now, the likes of Ferries and out at the Carton Centre. I mean, that's great because that gets the boys off the road. They can go on there and hash about all their night and they're happy, and, you know, that kind of takes it out of them. Like, more availability, and even if, like, you know, the politicians want to listen, like, try and find somewhere that this can happen. I mean, where's the nearest racetrack? You have to go way to the far end of the north, or way down the hill there. Like,
what are you driving?
We don't really have any facilities up here.
What are you driving? What car are you looking at there?
It's a 1999 Subaru Impreza.
What colour?
It's a kind of custom. It's like an orange, like a copper orange colour.
Lovely. That's
one-off
the one
colour
ourselves. All right, that's on the 04. That's on the 074 Facebook page, isn't it? It's a lovely, lovely looking car.
Yep, thank you very much. My own car, and
you must have arms on you like Arnold Schwarzenegger polishing that thing. People can go on to Facebook. Check out 074 0 word 7 number 4 word. And see the work that they're doing and get more information on the Cars and Coffee event that's coming up. And listen, thanks for coming on and I suppose, striking a balance, which is what we look for here in the show. Take care, Andy. Happy travels. Safe travels. All right, thank you. Andy Harkin, car enthusiast and member of the Donegal-based Car Club 047. Greg with the tow bar. Okay, I wish I'd never mentioned me tow bar now. It was so long ago as well. Seriously, UK caters for these people. We seem to tarnish them all. The UK have loads of meat spots. Check these out. Ace Cafe London, Caffeine and Machine Workshire, Jack's Hill Cafe Northampton, The Old Can Cafe West Yorkshire. That comes in from my old friend Oisin, who's of the view that Caroline does everything. Well, Oisin, you were right. Okay, so yeah. Maybe we do need to change our attitude, because I was driving, as I've mentioned, did I mention on the show yesterday, down to Dublin. I think there must have been a rallying event in, where did I see it? Oh, I can't remember. But the place was packed with cars and families that had parked on the main road to, was it Monaghan? On the main road to go and see, obviously, stages of the rally on the back roads. I mean, it's huge in this country, yet we have this massive rally culture. And then we have this sort of attitude towards people who drive modified vehicles. It doesn't actually make an awful lot of sense. Right, okay, we are going to be speaking to Penny after this short break. There is actually more to that tow bar story that I didn't reveal yesterday, if I'm actually honest with you, in that I put the tow bar, I didn't put the tow bar in my car. I put the tow bar in Aisling's car, because I didn't want to be towing in my car. But anyway, that's the truth. Right, okay. Penny, good morning to you.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Now, you've a story of insurance and dealing with an insurance company. What was the situation?
I do, Greg. Well, my car is in need of some repair. So my father offered to lend me his car for a week or so until it's repaired, you know. I have two young children and I'm just staying at home with my youngest. I'm a hairdresser. So we rang its insurance company and they were going through the questions. 13 years, full license, no claims, and 32 years old. That was grand. Everything was perfect. And asked what was my occupation. And the style replied, well, she's at home at the minute with her young child. Mm-hmm. Oh, and they just cut him completely down and says, no, sorry, we can't insure. And the fowler was, you know, why was that? And they said, I need to be in full-time employment.
Wow, okay.
So it's just a bit bewildering, you know, to come back. It takes more. It takes a lot to kind of shock him, you know, and it shocked me. I'm to ring back the insurance today and query them more on it.
Mm-hmm.
I am actually insured. I have a policy. What's the same company as well as he's on? It's just it's kind of shocking, you know. Why would you refuse insurance because you're at home with your young child?
Yeah. Penny, this is not the point that you're making, but if you're a policy holder and his car is insured, are you not covered to drive his car anyway?
I don't think it is open driven. I think problem.
I don't think it has to be open driven. I think your insurance covers you to drive any car that is actually insured. That was my understanding, Penny. I don't want to mislead anyone, but double check your policy, especially given your age. I think it doesn't apply if you're under 25, but I would have thought that your policy covers you to drive his car anyway. That's a benefit of your insurance, if you know what I mean. But double check that. I know that's not why you rang, but just double check that. You're being disadvantaged because effectively you could say you're on maternity leave. You're choosing to stay at home to care for your child. That in of itself is a bit unfair that you're being discriminated for making that choice. Because if you were at work and decided not to, then there wouldn't be a problem.
That's clearly what it is, Greg. I mean, my father would just like to have everything above board. I know I am insured with my own policy, but my father's just very, you know, he would like to have me on his name policy. Driver in my mother's policy.
He's an I dotter and a T crosser by the sounds of things. He wants
He wants to make sure everything is right. And he's right too, in a way, you know.
But I think that you're with the same company as well. It kind of, it's a bit of a slap in the face as well, isn't it?
It is, you know. They don't open to 10 o'clock, this particular company. So I do tend to ring them up this morning now and find out some more information as to why they've refused. I mean, everything was going grand, you know, with terms of full license, no claims, etc. And just when he said that was my occupation at the minute, at home with my daughter, no, they can't insure me.
I would have thought, too, that you're not commuting to and from work, that you would actually be more attractive, if you know what I mean.
You're not traveling too far, you know. It's only really to take my young son, who just lives down here. Our school is quite close by, you know. Mm. It's just a bit of it's just to take children back and forth. Well,
you're 13 years full license, no claims. You've said your age. You're old enough. Do you know what I mean? So there's absolutely no reason. The only reason is because you are home. Which is crazy. Let us know how that conversation goes after you spend 2.5 hours waiting for someone to answer the phone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, listen to the automated voice and stuff. I'll get through.
But listen, and double check if I would have thought that your insurance, as I say, I'm not giving advice because I can't do that. But I would have thought that you're, as a policyholder, you're covered to drive an insured car. But double check that anyway, Penny.
Yeah, I'll double check that, Greg. Yeah, I will. But as I said, the fella just likes to have everything right, you know, on his days. But I'll get on that, Greg, and I'll let you know. Sure, I'll text you in.
Love to everyone. Thanks very much, Penny. Take care of yourself. Appreciate that. There have been a lot of people killed on Irish roads, says a texter. If we closed every road where people died, there would be no roads. During the war, with the amount of people bombed and killed in the likes of London, they rebuilt. Now in Gaza, they will rebuild. People die in areas all the time. You just can't just shut them off. I know where you're coming from and what that's in relation to, but I mean, we have to think of other people's feelings as well and make sure that what we do is the right thing. I don't know what the right thing to do is, but that's just what we have to try and ensure. We were talking too about yesterday about people not being good with taking compliments. The caller says Irish people in general get embarrassed when they get a compliment. I keep telling young people to be more like the Americans and lap it up and just say thank you. All right, let's not go too far that direction either. If your daughter took her... I'll come back to that one because they're mixed up there and I want to make sure that I'm not jumping from one issue to another, especially if it seems insensitive. So stay with us. We're coming up again after 10. Grania's in with Community Garda information, so stay tuned for that. That's live after we get the news and obituary notices.